Hello and welcome to Jules from NZ, a podcast from a Kiwi chick, chock it with roleplay gaming chat and world lore of the most fantasy place ever, Aotearoa, New Zealand. We play games, get deep into RPG, learn fun facts about New Zealand and laugh a lot along the way. Can't wait to have you listening along. Ngā mihi nui. Thanks very much. Kia ora, mō tēnā, tēnā koutou katoa. Hello and welcome back to all of you, to Jules from NZ. Kei te pēhea koutou, how are you all? Well, kei te tino pai. I am very good, especially compared to last episode 2 weeks ago when I could barely string a sentence together without coughing. The pausing was a little annoying on recording, sorry crew. It really was the best I could do at the time. So, updates. Where is Jules at? Well, I'm still trying to stream on Twitch weekly, and that's going okay over at Jules from NZ. I had some new follows in the last one, and I'm working towards a new milestone there, so that's pretty cool. At work, my boss resigned. That apparently that's hard to say for me still, due to a promotion with our parent company. So he resigned to basically have a promotion, but at a different branch, but still kind of sort of working for the same company. It's all very scratch each other's back. But basically, things are flat tack at work, gearing into recruitment for me because, you know, HR manager. So I have to figure out what he's been doing for the last 30 years and how to advertise for that and how to basically get all of the knowledge out of his head that's just kind of there and down onto paper so that we can make sure the next person has some kind of inkling or at least has some training kind of guides on how this works. It's a lot, but it's okay. They have me, right? Anyway, what else is happening? Oh, the first wink gig of the year. So those of you who don't know, maybe you're new to listening. I play in a covers band here in New Zealand. So we play rock and roll covers, everything from kind of the Beatles right through to like Chili Foo Fighter, Killers stuff, you know, sort of 80s, 90s, and a little from the 2000s kind of rock and roll covers songs. And we had our first band gig at basically an RSA, a Retired Servicemen's Association, which is in New Zealand less about being a retired military person and more about just being kind of old and wanting a club to join. Yeah, that's kind of what they are. But we get a few gigs through the RSAs. They're good fun gigs. Just, you know, a bunch of, you know, people my age and upwards just wanting somewhere to sit and have good dinner and meet their friends and have a bit of a boogie. And, you know, it's quite a good time, actually. But our first gig was a bit of a disaster, honestly. Our bassist rang us at about 1 p.m. saying that he had slammed his thumb in the car door earlier that day and he'd been praying it was going to get better and it seemed to be getting worse and he was pretty sure he was going to have to go to the hospital and maybe get surgery. So, you know, it was a time, like, you know, maybe a splint or, you know, he might have broken his thumb or something, you know. Anyway, it was a bad time. And so we were on mad scramble because it was the first gig of the year, you know, and actually first gig at this particular RSA for well over a year. So they were giving us another shot, you know, and we really didn't want to let them down. So we did a mad scramble, came up with a guy that Paul, my partner, actually knows through school. He plays enough bass to get by. We sent him the song list. He goes, oh yeah, I know about, I can, you know, probably play about half of these. I can sort of figure out some of the rest of them on tab. Is it okay if I bring my laptop and just have bass tabs up? And we were like, yes, if you'll get us out of a pickle, that is totally fine. You know, so first time we're ever playing with this bassist and it's just live at a gig. The poor guy had about 40 minutes to work himself into sound check, making sure that he sounded okay. And then we strummed out some stuff. We made a song list around him. Which are your five most comfortable? Which do you know the best? Let's put the best up the top and then we'll kind of figure it out from there, you know? Well, because, you know, you don't want them to be figuring out how to play the song as well as figuring out how we perform all at the same time. So, you know, tried to cut them some slack there. So, you know, And then he actually did remarkably well. Like, yes, he was looking at a laptop and maybe that's, you know, bad form as such, but we explained to the venue what had happened and they were just stoked that we still turned up. So I don't think they were really bothered about whether we had a laptop out or not, you know. And he played some bum notes, definitely, for sure, but he had enough musical talent to be able to kind of pick it up and fix at the time. So that was kind of good, like, you know. So honestly, full credit to that guy. He did a remarkable job. It was a pretty funny gig. I got taken out by a hen's night in the bad way, in the real bad way. Like, there was, you know, the bride to be there with all of her hens, and they were getting trashed and they were having a great time. And actually they saved me a lot because we didn't have as many songs as we would normally. We've got like a list that's 150 songs long. So usually we don't have to worry about how many songs we have to play in order to fill the time slot, right? But this time it really mattered. We only had maybe 50 songs we could play and we had 3 hours or 3.5 to fill. So I was bantering out of my backside. Like, I was just, this hen's night saved me a lot because she kept coming up to me with dare cards that she needed to do, and I would make those dare cards last like 5 minutes between songs. I'm like, you know, luckily they had a huge party and they were taking up a lot of the space, so I was, you know, kind of getting away with it. But I wasn't doing it all the time, to be clear. I was like letting 3 or 4 songs run and then I would take a break again and do something with her again, you know. So she was, you know, really enjoying herself, having a great time. We even got the groom to be turned up at one point. And I found out that that was the case because obviously I was interacting with her quite a lot. And I sort of said on stage, well, Lizzie and Simon, there's a dead giveaway, Lizzie and Simon, if you're out there listening for some reason to this podcast. But Lizzie and Simon, you need to make your way up here and help me sing this song. And I got them to sing like Wonderwall to each other. And it was very cute. She couldn't really sing, and she was very honest with me about that. She's like, I can't sing. She had panic look in her eyes. And her partner's like, oh no, Wonderwall, I got this. And he just like started blasting it out. And like every time it got a bit cute, like the lyrics got a bit cute, like they're, you know, singing to each other about, you know, like not being able to, you know, say things to her or whatever, you know, he was like partially making out with her while he was sort of singing. And I was like, no, this was actually a really great idea because the bassist didn't know how to play it. So we thought we'd sort of do like this weird acoustic version of it. And it actually worked really well because nobody was really listening to the song. They were all just watching them be cutesy. And so it was great. But anyway, so he was there. At one point, they decided to do that classic thing that everybody does when they're really drunk, and they pick somebody up. So he picked her up and was bouncing her around and trying to do the, you know, yay, you know, like, look at me carrying my wife thing. Yeah, yeah, you can see where this is going. It went real bad, and it went real bad directly in my direction. So they kind of toppled, and I saw them coming, and I had enough time, like split second time, to be like, do I dive out of the way? Or do I save the drum kit? Because the drum kit's directly behind me. And if they go head first into that drum kit, that drum skin is breaking and that's it. Like, that's it for the rest of our gig. Not only that, but like our, you know, our drummer is, you know, not exactly made of money, and a drum skin is expensive and it'll really put him out. So I just got to sacrifice myself at this point. So I just stayed there and kind of like hugged them as they landed at me and sort of got taken down to the ground, just boofa, landed on the ground. And there's like 2 stairs kind of behind me, and then the drums was up the stairs. And so I managed to sort of land just on my elbow, kind of protecting the drum kit and the microphone. So I like hit the edge of the drums, but not the center of the drums, which is an important part. And I didn't knock the microphone stand driving like the drum mic into the drum skin. So I managed to save all of that. Check, gave myself a quick check because they did this in the middle of a song I was singing at the time, and lying on the ground, not missing a single beat while everybody is going, I go, born to be wild, and just keep singing, just keep going. A hand reached out of the crowd, pulled me to my feet. I was incredibly grateful to that person because I wasn't really sure I could feel my legs at that point. And I just stood up and kept going. I messed up a little bit. I missed some of the, ooh, I missed some of those bits because I was a little bit distracted by what was going on, but it was still a really good gig. She was epically apologetic. They raved about us. They thought we were amazing. They gave poor Riley, the new bassist, such big congratulations at the end of it. And at the end of it, he's like, is this what it's always like? And I was like, oh yeah, and worse sometimes. So I think you got a new education of what a covers band really goes through. Yeah, really putting myself all out there for the gig, you know? Anyway, let's talk about some RPG because it's been like, I don't know, 10 minutes or something, and we haven't even talked about any. But, you know, that's the way my life goes. It's full of a variety. I should start calling myself the Jules from NZ Variety Podcast, all right? Right, Jason? Right? And it's just me doing the variety because I don't get as many call-ins as you do, buddy. You're doing it good. Speaking of Jason, I'm going to let him say a few things, and then I've got a brand new caller that you're going to hear from, and I'm very excited to share with you. So take it away, Michael from Merc the Meek and Jason from Nerds RPG Variety Cast. Jules Gems.
Hey Jules, this is Michael. I just released a podcast episode talking about My Little Pony, the deck builder card game. And Jason Connerly left me a message telling me that you did some RPG sessions in Equestria, and he suggested that I check out your podcast. So I just listened to your latest episode, and the birthday bash sounds amazing, doing a birthday party in a game store. That sounds like a lot of fun. I don't have much help for your time questions when it comes to RPGs. It sounds like you're playing 5e, and I don't have any experience with like high level 5e, so I don't know if I could really give you too much. But you also mentioned help for COVID. I'm sorry that you're dealing with that again. My family does a lot of like natural remedy stuff, so I do have some suggestions for that, with the caveat that I am not in the medical profession. And, you know, you should probably consult your doctor more than some random stranger calling into your show. But some not so natural things to start off with would be zinc balanced with copper. If you take zinc or copper by itself, you start to become deficient in the other one. So taking them together in the right proportion can help boost the immune system. Also, vitamin C and vitamin D, those are good ones. And one last not so natural thing would be Mucinex or some kind of expectorant. But make sure during the day you do not have a cough suppressant. If you're trying to get rid of the gunk out of your lungs, you want to be able to cough it up. So I don't know why you would want a cough suppressant along with an expectorant. But I suppose at night, the cough suppressant will help you sleep. Some more natural things would be gargling with salt water on a regular basis, you know, warming up salt water, not that you can't put it in your mouth, but warm enough that it kind of dissolves the salt, and then you gargle to kill some of the bacteria and virus stuff going on in your throat. That's a technical term, virus stuff. Also, elderberries, either in like tea form or like an elderberry syrup. You can find those, I think, over the counter, or you can make your own. That's a lot of work. But those can help boost the immune system. And then lastly, in America, there's a brand of teas called Traditional Medicinals. I don't know if that's over in New Zealand, but they have a throat coat tea with echinacea. So it's soothing on the throat, but it also helps to boost the immune system. I like the tea so much, I would just drink it even if I wasn't sick. But if you don't have Traditional Medicinals, I'm sure there's other brands out there that would do similar for you. So I don't know if these things are specifically for COVID, but this is kind of the regimen that we do when sickness hits our house in general, whether it's COVID or flu or whatever else. So those are my suggestions there. I hope you have a speedy recovery. And I look forward to checking out your back catalog and any future episodes. So take care.
Hey, Jules. I hope you get feeling better soon. Being sick is no fun, but it sounds like that best surprise party ever. Really cool. I'm glad that you were able to experience that, and it's awesome that they all love you enough and pulled together and pulled that off. Very, very neat. So, but take care of yourself. Get better. And we'll talk to you soon.
I love it. I'm into it. So, yes, I am feeling much better. Thanks for the well wishes. Really appreciate it. And thanks for the epic health facts there, Michael. Honestly, giving me some info I didn't know about mixing and matching my vitamins for best results. And I have actually been doing saltwater gargles for years for singing preparations and care. They're horrid, but they do really work. Unfortunately, with the singing, I have to stay away from most things that dry you out, as they're so bad for the vocal cords if I have to sing on top of that. Really wish that I could, though, because phlegm is kind of the worst and also is hell on my singing. So you can't really win one way or the other. But I totally put some of that into practice, and I'm sure my vitamin regime is improved tenfold for that. So thank you very much. And listen to Merc the Meek for, as he says, disparate thoughts on disparate topics, but most likely gaming related. So there you go. Heard it from him. You also heard just a little snip of me. And that's because Pink Phantom has gone and snipped me out of a few different sound bites. And you're going to hear another one later. But first, I asked you guys a question last time, and I said that I was going to go away and do some research. And what I really meant is I was going to think about how I was going to keep my players on task for the timeline that lies ahead of me. It's a big job, right? And there is a lot of work that goes into a podcast, as we all know, that do podcasting out there, but also a lot of work that goes into a homebrew campaign, as you know, if you're doing one out there. So I have to combine the two, and it's a lot. I have to think about audience. I have to think about timing. I have to think about marketing and promotion. I have to think about how to get people to help, like, us create this thing, you know, how to make sure my fans are happy as well as my players are happy. It's a huge balancing task. And one of the things that works the best is making sure that our sessions are tight. So here is Jules' top 10 tips for keeping your sessions tight. And here I'm not talking about making a turn quick. To be very clear, right off the bat, I'm talking about keeping to a time slot, making the cliffhangers matter, sticking to a set number of sessions to end a whole story thread. So yes, turns matter in a time critical way, but that will not speed up the story no matter how hard you tap your watch. So what you can do to help your players stick to the slot and make every moment matter. I'm no expert for sure, but I have found a few of the following tricks help me keep my podcast rolling and interesting. Enough that our little actual play, Fate of Eisen, is still well listened after many, many years. So, one, session zero, man. Firstly, decide what game you are playing. Do you have a big major story happening in the world that your adventurers are crucial to solving? And everything hangs on what they do? Or is the big story happening with or without their interactions, and they have a lot more freedom on whether they stop it even at all, or they just live in the world that that thing is happening in, just doing stuff? This matters. So this is your own session zero. Like, sit down with yourself, decide what the game even is before you get started. And I'm not saying write the story, because the second step of session one and the second step of this top tips is work with your players on the game that you will run. Do they prefer lots of combat, lots of interactions? Do they like lots of options and really value the opportunity to make the choice and decide the next steps with real impact? And I'm not talking about the fake impact of a presented choice that really only has one logical answer if you're going the right way. That's not a real choice, right? Or do they like it like some options when it really, really matters? Otherwise, are pretty happy to flow with the general story from plot point to plot point and follow it through. Get an agreement to run the time slot to the amount of sessions. Make them understand the need for speed and check that they are okay with that way of play. If everybody's in, cool. If not, then this either isn't the game for them, or you're choosing a different style of play and you're not doing this. This is why session zeros are so important, because if you get it wrong, bad crap happens. Step three. Now that you know what game you're playing and what your players want to play, planning, planning, planning. It's painful, but stepping out the entire story thread in some kind of detail and breaking it up into what you think you might be able to achieve in each session is crucial, even if it's as simple as a sentence. How I do it? I start with a paragraph that sums up the entire year's long campaign. I do. I basically write a paragraph which sums up 3 years worth of, I think, work. Then I break it down into smaller acts, where in each act, some major step is achieved, like however many acts it needs to be. In my Fate of Aizen one, currently, it's 5 acts. It's a story in 5 acts. I know exactly what needs to happen at the end of each major step. And then from there, I broke it down into a sentence which sums up what each session within the act could contain. What this helps me do is step out how many sessions I think I'm going to need and really be able to present that to my players to get some buy-in. That does not mean that they don't have choices here. It just means that you've had to work through what you think-ish it'll mean. And sometimes my sentences are literally just saying, explore the world in some details, play around in it. That's literally what I think a session will contain. Obviously, it'll be more full by the time we get to that session, but I kind of think they're going to need a session to play in the world about that. Cool. I note that. If your players want real meaningful choices, it sort of finishes looking more like a cross between a list and a flowchart, because in actual fact, you've had to sort of step out your stuff based on what choice they might make at the time, right? Because real meaningful choices should mean real meaningful endings that are hinged on those choices. So there should be several different endings that they could achieve. I know your heart's set on this big ending, but that kind of leads us into the next point. Kill your darlings. You will have many great ideas, wonderful ideas. The page will flow with the breadth of your storytelling genius. Just don't do them all. You won't be able to. A 3-hour session, if that's what you're playing to, gives loads of interaction. Combat time only really has enough space for 3 interactions with location, person, or combat. I literally mean that. I mean 3 of either a location change, a combat, or an NPC to learn information from. If you're putting in more than 3 things, they aren't meaningful interactions. You're putting in a whole load of stuff you have to speed run them through, and it barely makes a scratch of an impact. So why are you including them in the first place? Can you not include that crucial piece of information in the location that you send them to explore somehow, rather than introducing a whole nother person that has to tell them about it? You know, like really think about it. Like step it out and then kill your darlings. Trust me on this. You need to leave room for the PCs to breathe and learn and explore and grow, especially if you're doing a campaign. If you're not letting them like breathe and grow, then they aren't changing as characters and there's no meaningful resolution for them at the end. So leave room. I mean, really, the only reason you're including more room descriptions or more NPCs for them to act with at that point is because you love hearing the sound of your own voice. And you should probably take a hard look at that, because if you're DMing in that style, I don't know, it's my feeling very clearly, the players should be doing the most talking. I should be able to set it up and then they should take it away. I should have minimal interactions. Ask, you know, answer when asked kind of thing from that point. Don't hide the stakes is point number 5. Put them up front and make them loud. Why should they care about anything that is happening if they do not know what the stakes of it are? Tell them why. Tell them what's up. It builds urgency. It allows them to link their whole backstory, motivations, and future motivations into those stakes and really get engaged with it. Number 6, recaps. Letting your players know about what they have behind them and what lies ahead is helpful. Punishing them by never reminding them of anything means that when you get to your reveal that you've worked really hard on, you're looking at blank faces. So help them remember what they're working on, looking towards, have on the line, and are fighting for. It builds better engagement. It builds quicker, like, movement. It builds, like, recognition of the big important fact that you just dropped, instead of you having to, like, drop a fact and nobody realizing, and then ages later they're like, oh, I wish you'd given me some information on that fact. And, like, you're well, you know, like, you're into more sessions than you need to be because they completely missed the information that you gave them because you forgot to remind them why they're there. Cliffhangers. Number 7, your players are never more engaged at the beginning of a new session when they can remember the ending of the last one. They clamber to know more, or they clamber to, you know, explore how their character reacted to that big info drop of the last session, you know. So while it can be a little overused sometimes, the big cliffhanger, it is a great trick. And sometimes it can literally be as simple as, what do you read in that letter? I guess you'll have to wait until next time to find out. Or you open the door and you just have to find out what's happening next week behind the door. Or literally, the NPC drops a big old lore fact and they don't have time to react to it right then because the session ends and they have a whole week to think about how they can react to that, what questions they might have in response to that. This is also good building time because they come ready and they come with stuff, which means a better session. Again, and better payoff for you. You built this cool story. You want your players to engage with it. So let them, you know. I have no problem stopping in the middle of a fight either. I take notes about where things are at, especially if it's dramatic and someone goes down, perfect spot. You know, because they will go away and they'll be reading their character sheet desperately. They'll know exactly what their character sheet can do. And they'll be like having their first turn, you know, stepped out and coming back in. That's perfect. That's the perfect kind of level of awesome engagement and motivation and pre-planning thought that you need, especially in a podcast where things need to come in with a bang, you know. And that's actually something that I've carried over into campaigns, because that time for them to think and process and engage and then think about what their character would do is all crucial stuff. Not everybody can act, you know, on the spot, improvised, go, you know. That's a learned skill, which is why I run with comedians, because they already kind of have that, you know, they're building that muscle. But it's not always easy. So it's a great trick to do, is to let them have that moment where they get to go away and think. One of my campaigns is actually on pause for the last 2 years as a player whose life is literally hanging in the balance right now. I think on 2 death saving throws, and they're like, third one is coming up. So when we get back, that's going to be epic. I think I'm a fan of this point particularly in my notes, though. It's why I bounced off Witch's Marches a little, because what's my callback to adventure? What's my motivation? And why I love one-shots too, because you get the satisfaction of an ending with no memory requirements or no weird cliffhanger that doesn't really engage me, you know. So yeah, anyway, point 8, stick to the slot. Be ruthless. No, you don't get to play longer. That's your punishment for taking too long. You should have made a decision quicker and then you'd know what's on the other side of that door. Be ruthless, because next time they'll be clock watching too, and they'll be trying to get through the session just as much as you are. 9, see the indecision and have some quick suggestions to help them decide up your sleeve. Things like the stopwatch, sure, to build the pressure. But if they aren't sure how their character would react, maybe you could do something like encourage them to list a few options and hang it on a dice roll. You know, 1 to 2, you try and chat with them. 3 to 4, you try and intimidate them into staying back. 5 to 6, you attack first. It helps move things along, provides a chaotic element that can be quite fun, and gets a character out of a sticky point while still allowing you to move the action along quickly. Also, descriptions of things going on around the characters trick is to remind them that time doesn't stop while they debate issues. You know, it's a good trick. They're in the game talking, so the game moves on. I've totally warned groups before that things are getting closer, or, you know, the NPC is moving off and they're going to lose them in the crowd, or, you know, any kind of degree of that variation, like, you know, that time kind of element, but described in a way that's not a stopwatch, you know? things are moving in the world. People are moving in the world. And I will remind my players sometimes when they're in a heavy conversation about what they're going to do, that they're sitting in this room when the monsters are outside. Monsters have time to prep too. And so they are likely to have readied actions and stuff. And they're like, oh, shit, you know. And it's, oops, sorry, I swore. But, you know, it's a good wee trick as well. It also kind of gives them a warning. Like, hey, you guys might be taking a little long. Wrap up what you're going. And I follow through with those consequences. People learn to think and act quick. But again, remembering we've agreed on the stakes and the time and the way of play well before we get here. So everybody knows what I'm trying to do and why I'm trying to do it. And they're agreed to it in the first place. So when I drop that consequence on them, they know it's their fault. 10, don't be scared to pull up out of gameplay and be the DM you need to be for the other player's safety and fun. If you need to do an out-of-play reminder that we all have a time slot and set sessions and amount to get through this in, and you need them to all work together to reach that, do it. Have a chat with someone you see slowing the game down outside the game, perhaps. Touch base with why they feel like they're doing that. Give them some suggestions on how they can make quicker, you know, decisions if they're getting stuck. Maybe it's that they don't understand part of their character sheet and you really haven't spent any time with them going through any of that. So, you know, there's usually a reason why people aren't joining you on the need for it to be a game of speed in certain situations. You know, I will quite often give my players a load of time to interact, a limited time, sure, but a load of time to interact with a situation. And then I will also phase them out and phase them back in several hours later into the next important thing that we need to be doing. That's point number 11. That's a bonus point. Because not always is the travel important. Not always is the time between things that you want them to do important. You could probably miss that and not lose anything. Give them that time to have had a short rest. You know, you've had a short rest now and we come back in and you're doing this now, you know. Not every second of the game is important, so feel free to time skip. That is my bonus point 11. And now that I think I've explained myself better on what I mean about keeping your sessions tight, I would really love to hear what other people think on my top 10 tips list for keeping your sessions tight, whether you have your own top tip, whether you vehemently disagree with me on one of the... I just want to hear what you think. Yeah. This is a lot of chat, guys. I hope you enjoyed that. All right, what do we got up next? Okay, this episode is already 33 minutes long, which is a lot of time for you to listen to me talk. So I really appreciate you still being here. I just wanted to tell you a little bit about some of my games updates. I'm going to miss out on Wrath the Righteous, even though I love that game, because Joey usually covers it and we are out of time. I would like to tell you a little bit about my Icewind Dale game, where they sorted out a Goliath clan fight with a game of Goat Ball. Well, not completely just a game of Goat Ball. And this is kind of a spoiler. For Icewind Dale. So if you really want to play that through and not run it, like maybe just skip ahead maybe a minute or so. I'll go do that now. So yeah, essentially they met two clans of Goliaths. They met two people down in 10 towns. They were escorting them back home. They realized they were from opposite clans, but they kind of fancied each other. The whole thing. But you know, it's a Romeo and Juliet situation because the clans have been at war forever. You know, they started being at war with a game of Goat Ball. And game of Goat Ball essentially is a ball where the two opposing teams of four throw at each other while they stand on pillars and try and knock each other off pillars. So dodgeball, but up higher, essentially. And the game itself in the book is really fun because it's just you four roll your either athletics or acrobatics rolls and total it, and then the four that you're playing against do the same and total it, and highest roll wins. Very quick, easy fun, seems like a game. I really, really enjoyed just the aspect of like winning a game, and then I got them to sort of describe something that happened during the game. Like, did they fall off their pillar? Did they knock somebody off the pillar? Did they manage to just really staunch hold the ball so it didn't get knocked off? You know, so they kind of were able to describe the game with just the total. So it wasn't really about the roles completely. It was very fun. And that's all I'm going to talk about it, because I said that people were only going to skip ahead a minute or so. But honestly, I could talk about Icewind Dale forever. It's a very fun campaign. And if you want to hear more, just hit me up, basically. But anyway, the most important thing I wanted to talk about is Fate of Aizen. So Fate of Aizen, we're finally in the water chapter. We're headed out over and under the seas. And in the last episode, we took on the water for real. And I even sang a sea shanty in my last episode, which the Pink Panther kindly cut out of our audio for me. So I thought that I would play that for you all here so you can hear me improvise a tune of my original salty song. I wrote the lyrics. I put almost no thought into what the tune of this thing was going to be, and I realized live on stream that that was the case, and I had not decided what the tune of this, you know, sea shanty would be, but my partner's a big sea shanty fan, so I just kind of channeled my inner Paul and his drunken friends when they're screaming sea shanties at the top of their lungs when they're drunk, and this is how it came out. So I hope you enjoy the next 13, 15 seconds or so. Enjoy. Oh, below the sea is where I be, where the light sparkles on a mermaid's tail, and the salty water fills the sails on my way to my darling seaweed ale. Oh, below the sea is where I be. Yeah, so that's a thing. So silly, but I hope you enjoyed hearing my silly little sea shanty. And thank you again so much, Pink Panther, for chopping it out and allowing everybody here to hear it too. It's very funny. Anyway, we're up to the section where I would normally do some kind of review. So I wanted to talk a little bit about a book that I read recently called The Druid's Call by E.K. Johnson. I'm not really going to give a book review, although I do think that you should read it. It is one of the prequels to the Dungeons and Dragons movie, focusing specifically on the druid of the story and talking about where they came from and a little bit about Simon's story, because Simon's story is kind of interwoven there. But what I am going to talk about is that I really like the way that they picture and they portray a druid learning their calling by like going away to another camp. And I really, really like the way that they address that tiefling, how tieflings can come into being. You know, from like a human mother, no idea potentially, or maybe hiding that they knew or whatever. And I thought I would talk a little bit about, because I'm fascinated by tieflings. I really love playing tiefling characters. Just in case you didn't know how tieflings are usually created, as far as I know the lore to be true. And I honestly encourage you to call in if I'm wrong or you think different or you've heard different. I mean, I honestly love talking about tieflings. So let's go. Anyway, so as you probably know, I'm probably telling most of you out there listening to suck eggs, but I don't mean to be, but tieflings are created in one of three ways: as a human transformed into a tiefling using powerful magic, as the offspring of an existing tiefling, or as the offspring of a human and a cambion or half-fiend. So basically one of those three ways. Tieflings are usually descended from various evil beings, including demons, devils, Rakshaya, is that how you say it? Anyway, night hags, or the avatars of evil deities. Their appearance varies considerably and often reflects that of their fiendy ancestor heritage. So they can actually be a little furry if they come from the old big old tiger looking characters, or they can be a little, you know, darker skinned, withery looking of the night hag situation, or, you know, the red with hooves and horns type situation of the devil, you know. So you'd think that they'd be pretty rare, honestly, considering how they're born. You know, you either have to have come from a tiefling or be the offspring of a human and a cambion or half-fiend. And yes, we know that bad things happen to humans sometimes by cambions or half-fiends that sort of take advantage, or some humans are just into that. but you really would think it's kind of rare. But there is a small problem. Some tieflings pass almost completely for human. This is actually most common among the tieflings of distant plains, whose very faint, fiendish ancestry is ancient and unknown sometimes even to them. Most have one feature that betrays their heritage, but it's usually something like they have red eyes and everything else is normal, or they have tiny little horns and everything else is normal. You could definitely pass that off as just generically fey, or they have a missing shadow. And I mean, who's looking for that, really? Especially if you're like getting down with someone in a pub, you know what I'm saying? You're not exactly looking at a shadow. So, you know, it's interesting to think about, like, playing a character who doesn't actually know that they're a tiefling and they just have this ancestry and their magic just kind of like comes out of themselves as they like get put in situations and they don't even really know what's going on. You know, I think that could be quite a fun, you know, like that whole hellish rebuke, you know, where did that come from? You know, kind of aspect of play. I think it would be really fun. Anyway, I love the tiefling as a character type to play, and I always feel like they have a really exciting feeling start in life, and also an interesting way that other characters interact with them based on their preconceptions to the race in general. Like if you're a, you know, like a sort of more visually presenting tiefling, how do other people feel about you? It's usually not as simple as like, yeah, I'm good with that. Tieflings exist in the world. It's usually a little bit of mistrust, or, you know, like there's a lot of stereotyping that goes on because of how tieflings are brought into being. So, yeah, that's what I think about tieflings and why I think they're fun to play and why I really think that the book, The Druid's Call, does a cool job of portraying some of that, like, fear, some of that, how the child was brought into being, how other characters interact with that child, how they discover their own magic and connection to themselves because they don't know what they are, and how they literally have to figure out how to deal with their their own tale because they don't know what it is or how to deal with it and stuff. It's just such a fun representation that I think you have to read it like just for that aspect of it alone. Yeah. Anyway. Tieflings. So again, tell me all about if you hate tieflings, love tieflings, your favorite tiefling fact, myth, stereotype, story. I want to know all the things. If you think I got everything wrong, tell me, because I'm reading this from I mainly play D&D 5e, and that's where most of my lore kind of comes from and the things that I read. So I would love to hear about how they're represented in other games too, or other systems or other worlds. Like, I just want to know all the things. It'll be fun. Okay, what other reviews? Well, I don't have another review for you right now, but I can tell you something really important. We are supposed to be all watching Matthew Robbins' Dragon Slayer from 1981 in order to get our movie reviews to Freethal over on Keep Off the Borderlands. So make sure that you watch that movie before the 23rd of this month and get your movie review into Keep Off the Borderlands, readily available kind of everywhere. And talks on his episode about all the different ways to get a hold of him. So there is multiple, no excuses. I have not seen this movie yet, but I've heard lots of good things about it. So I'm actually really excited to join in this time. And I'm ready to watch this coming Friday. Very excited to revisit some 80s classics, rediscover some new fantasy favorites. Join in each month over on the Keep Off the Borderlands podcast to see the next movie that you're reviewing and be part of it. So Dragon Slayer is new to me, so fingers crossed for a good time. I'm really hoping so. Yeah. Anyway, I think it's probably time for me to get out of here. Let's see. Yeah, you know what? Some people would say it's overtime for me to get out of here. So let's get out of here. I want to say a big thank you again to my call-ins from Merc the Meek or Michael, and to Jason from Nerds RPG Variety Cast. I really love hearing from all of my call-ins. So thank you so much, lads, for calling in and, you know, passing on your sorry you're sick. It was nice to receive, you know, messages when I was feeling sorry for myself. So, and shout out to Pink Phantom, who allowed us to hear my silliness of the sea shanty and clip myself saying things that are fun. So funny. Okay. So thank you again. Personal thanks to my gems, my sparkling gems over on Patreon: Jason, Barry, Liren, Ezekiel, Violet, Joey, Samsara, Carl, BJ, Spencer, and the Pink Phantom. You are amazing people. Thank you for shining so brightly and helping me continue this crazy journey with you all. If you are interested in being a gem, go visit patreon.com/JulesFromNZ. Same as the podcast name, you'll see me there. And if you want to call in and be part of my show, I would love that. So you can either send messages through the Glitter Discord if you are a gem, or you can email me on JulzBurgesser@gmail.com. That's Jules Burgesser. That's my whole name on gmail.com. So with all of that said, thank you so much for joining me again. I have loved every second of this episode, and I hope you have found something to inspire you and help with your games, or call in and yell at me about it. I look forward to it either way. Inohora, ka kite anō, aroha nui. Goodbye. I will see you again soon, and I love you loads. Bye. Mwah. I love it. I'm into it.